ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 7, Text Number 43, Purport by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada. As soon as Ashvatthama was brought before Draupadi, she thought it intolerable that a Brahmin should be arrested like a culprit and brought before her in that condition, especially when the Brahmin happened to be a teacher's son. Arjuna arrested Ashvatthama, knowing perfectly well that he was the son of Dronacharya. Krishna also knew him to be so, but both of them condemned the murderer without consideration of his being the son of a Brahmin. According to revealed scriptures, a teacher or spiritual master is liable to be rejected if he proves himself unworthy of the position of a guru or spiritual master. A guru is called also an acharya, or a person who has personally assimilated all the essence of shastras and has helped his disciples to adopt the ways. Ashvatthama failed to discharge the duties of a Brahmin or teacher, and therefore he was liable to be rejected from the exalted position of a Brahmana. On this consideration, both Lord Sri Krishna and Arjuna were right in condemning Ashvatthama. But to a good lady like Draupadi, the matter was considered not from the angle of Shastric vision, but as a matter of custom. By custom, Ashvatthama was offered the same respect as offered to his father. It was so because generally the people accept the son of a Brahmin as a real Brahmin by sentiment only. Factually, the matter is different. A Brahmin is accepted on the merit of qualification and not on the merit of simply being the son of a Brahmin. But in spite of all this, Draupadi desired that Ashvatthama be at once released. And it was all the same a good sentiment for her. This means that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. She could not tolerate Ashvatthama's being bound by ropes, and being a devoted lady, she said, "Release him, for he is a Brahmin, our spiritual master." The Prabhupada makes the point in the last part of the purport here that a devotee of the Lord can tolerate all sorts of tribulation personally, but still such devotees are never unkind to others, even to the enemy. These are the characteristics of one who is a pure devotee of the Lord. And in describing the characteristics of devotees in the Srimad Bhagavatam, when Devahuti was hearing from Lord Kapiladev, there's a description of the qualities of a Vaishnav: Tatikshava Kurunika Surida Sarvadehinam Ajatra Shantava Shanta Sadhava Sadhubhushanaha. Sadhubhushana means that a Vaishnava is decorated with all good qualities. And first of those qualities is titikshava, which means tolerance. Tolerance of all types of things. As we know in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna told Arjuna that he should learn to tolerate all of the onslaughts of material nature, all the changes that take place in the body and the mind, and should be fixed in devotional service. Dehino smin yata dehe komaran yovaram jara tata dehantara praptir diras tatra namuyati. A person who is dira, he's undisturbed by these things, is the qualification for making advancement in spiritual life. And titikshava, the devotee is tolerant because actually a devotee feels that everything's being is an arrangement, is Krishna's arrangement. It's coming to him by Krishna's arrangement.
There's an old story about a minister of a king, and he was very devoted to the Lord, and he used to see everything in relationship to how Krishna was making some arrangement. And the king always brought him along with him wherever he went and would take his counsel. And whenever anything would happen, he could almost count on the minister to say, oh, it's Krishna's arrangement, it's Krishna's mercy. And so one day, the king was going out on some excursion, like a hunting trip, and he had his weapons with him and everything, and he asked the minister to come along. And the minister couldn't go that day, so the king went out, and by himself, and somehow or other he was captured by some dacoits, and they wanted to perform some kind of a sacrifice, and they were going to kill the king and sacrifice him to some deity. And right before they performed the sacrifice, they saw that first he went out and he was hunting, and then he lost his finger. I'm sorry. While he was hunting, and when he came back, he told his minister that what had happened, and he said, that's Krishna's arrangement. And the minister, the king said, the royal, personage has cut off his finger, and you say it's Krishna's arrangement. How could that be? He was infuriated. And he said, take it back. And he said, no, it's Krishna's arrangement. You'll see. And he said, I can't accept it. And he said, have him locked up. And he locked up his minister until he would come to his senses. So later on, he went out on this excursion, and then he was captured and taken into custody. And they were about to sacrifice him, but they saw that he wasn't a whole human being. He was missing part of his finger. So he was released. They said, oh, we can't sacrifice you, you're no good, you can go. So he went back and he said, he went to the place where the minister was imprisoned, and he, Hare Krishna, joy. And he released him, and he was jubilant, and he said, so I see how this was Krishna's arrangement. My finger was cut off now, and you're right, but one thing I've been thinking is that you've been suffering in this jail for months now, and that was my fault. How's that Krishna's arrangement? He said, well, I would have been with you. I'm always with you. And I have all my fingers. I would have been sacrificed. Anyway, something like that, but the point is that a devotee actually does see that everything is Krishna's arrangement. Some affliction comes to a devotee. He takes it as the Lord's mercy that, for instance, some bodily ailment might come. He'll get news that, you have something, And he takes it as Krishna's direct mercy that he's being warned. He's actually being uplifted in a way to remember his true nature. In the Bhagavatam, it's described how actually we become absorbed in the body, in the external body, and the body is called the second. It's another name for the body, it's the second. What is the first? The soul is the first. But the body manifests because of the soul, and therefore it's called the second. And it manifests, this material body can only manifest for one reason, because we desire it. It comes because we ask for it, because we actually desire it at some point. We get this material body. And it's a reflection of, so to speak, of our desire to enjoy the material world. It's an award. We've been awarded a particular body. And in the Bhagavatam, it's called the second, or dvitiya. This is another interpretation of the verse that Lord Chaitanya taught to Sanatana Goswami, where he said, Bhayam dvitiya abhinibheshita syad. So dvitiya means the second, that we're absorbed in the second, not in the first. And abhinibheshita means we're fully absorbed there. But when we understand how this second is really not an important place to invest, and our real investment is in the soul and in serving Krishna, and we see that Krishna is all merciful, then we become very tolerant of everything that comes, because we see that actually it's Krishna's arrangement for us to come back to Him and to concentrate on Him. And so Titikshava, a devotee, is very tolerant, and he tolerates also the offenses of others, because if a devotee is defamed by somebody else, or he's hurt bodily or in any way, a devotee tends to not want to take any kind of make any retribution, any retaliation against the person, because he sees, oh, this is Krishna's mercy, I deserved it. And not only that, there's a way in which a devotee living in this body, seeing that this is the second, I'm the first, and that this body is a result of my desire to enjoy the material world, but when karma is coming and something's happening to me, I'm coming closer to Krishna and my karma is being taken away. Let it unwind. Let it go. I'm not trying to patch it up. I'm not trying to hold on to it in any way. It'll take the course that it takes, and Krishna's speeding it up for me now. He's taking me away faster, bringing me back home, back to Godhead. So it becomes tolerant in this world of all kinds of things, because he sees that everything is actually an award by the Lord, whether it's an adverse situation or a good situation. In the case that something good comes, the devotee will use it in Krishna's service. Say, this was meant to advance the mission of my spiritual master. Now I'm being given some way to advance the mission of my guru. And if something bad happens, so-called bad, sees it as Krishna's arrangement to make him more serious, or to see another side, or to become detached from the world. And in every case, that's true for the devotee, because Krishna is personally taking care of the devotee. Ananyas chintayantamam yejana parigupashyate tesham nityabdi yuktanam yogakshemam bahamyaham. Krishna is personally caring. Yogakshemam bahamyaham. He personally carries what we lack and preserves what we have. And the way this can be understood is with the example of the cat. There's the cat and the rat, and the cat and the kitten. And the jaws are the same. The jaws of the cat to the rat are very fearsome, because when the cat comes, the rat can't get away. The cat's agile, and he can jump from here to there, and then when he pounces and catches the rat in its jaws, then the rat knows, this is death, I'm finished. And sometimes they squeak and stuff like that when they get caught. So poor rat caught in the jaws. So for a materialistic person, this material world is a fearsome place. Death is coming, and it's the jaws of death. It's fearful. But for the devotee, it's like the kitten. The cat also carries the kitten in its mouth. And you see, it's a very tender scene. The mother cat, you know, is licking the kitten and picks it up by the scruff of the neck, and they carry these kittens around by the neck, in the jaws. But it doesn't hurt the kitten. The kitten's like, where are we going? Okay, whatever. Something good's happening. We're moving. You know? For the devotee, it's like that. You know, the jaws come, with death, even death, and titikshava. So there's tolerance. And so devotee tends to be soft-hearted towards others. Titikshava karunika means merciful. A devotee wants to be merciful to everybody. And in any such situation, as we see Draupadi here, was reluctant to have this person killed, because actually, at one point, Prabhupada's saying, well, the code is that he should have been killed, but then, you know, Draupadi's being sentimental, but then he says, but that's the heart of a devotee. Same way as we had this question the other night in the Bhagavad Gita class, Dainidi asked, well, on one page, Prabhupada says that Arjuna is neglecting his duty, but on the other side, he says he doesn't want to do it because he's a soft-hearted devotee, right? So it's the same sort of dichotomy as being presented here. And the fact of the matter is that the devotee is soft-hearted and does have this feeling of mercy towards all living beings and wants to see that everyone is given an opportunity to come back to Krishna consciousness and doesn't want to harm people unnecessarily. So titikshava karunika surida sarvadehina means that the devotee's friendly towards all living entities, seeing that they're all parts and parcels. Yasmin sarvani bhutani atmai vadbud vijanataha tatrako mahakashoka ekatmam anupashyataha. One who always sees all living entities as spiritual sparks in quality one with the Lord becomes a true knower of things. What then can be illusion or anxiety for him? Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam tato navi jugupsate. One who always sees everything in relationship with the Lord and who sees all living entities as his parts and parcels. What's that other verse? Yastu sarvani bhutani atmani vanu pashyati sarva bhuteshu chatmanam. Translation is? Never hates anything or any being. Never hates anything or any being. So Draupadi here is even though her sons were killed by this Ashwatthama in a horrible action like this, in the end, she doesn't hate him. She doesn't feel hate towards him, because she has a compassionate heart. So, anyway, we'll see in these following verses that something has to be done. It's not that a Vaishnav just lets anything go. And it's not like, some people who are pacifists have said, well, if my family's being attacked, well, still I won't do anything. Well, that's not true either, because ultimately Arjuna stood up and fought. And he killed. And ultimately in this situation we'll see that there is a remedy and there is something that needs to be done to punish him. Because that's also mercy, that someone becomes punished. But in this context, seeing here how Draupadi has a soft heart, we can understand the quality of a Vaishnava is also always that they don't hate anything or any being because they see it all in relationship with Krishna. Suridam sarvabhutanam. Titikshava karunika surida savidehina ajata shatrava shanta. And also he's peaceful and he doesn't have any enemies. No one is the enemy of the devotee, because actually in the material world the reason there are enemies is because everyone wants to claim this is mine, and therefore there's friction with other people. Just like you see neighbors, sometimes they fight over a property line. Big fight takes place, 2 inches. And, they move the fence the wrong way, and then immediately there's, there's a big fight. Countries, over borderlines and fight for years and years and years of this is my property. And everyone's fighting over trying to maintain the second. This is my second, and everything relationship with the second, with this body, is mine. But because the devotee sees everything's Krishna's, it belongs to Krishna, therefore there's equality towards all other living beings, because he sees that actually it belongs to Krishna, it's not mine. And therefore he uses it in Krishna's service, and others see that he's not trying to encroach. Everyone's trying to get their own sense of gratification, but a devotee's actually extending him or herself to others, trying to give them mercy and not try to take from them to exploit. So often, devotees, when they speak about meeting Srila Prabhupada, would say, he's the first person I met, I could tell. He wasn't trying to exploit me. He just wanted to give me something. And so that's the feeling one will get around being around a devotee. Yes?
In situations such as this one, where a devotee has been harmed and becomes tolerant, doesn't take action, then is punishment, the situation of punishment left by the devotee, to the higher power or to somebody else.
Well, he will be punished in this situation. It's not that it's being left.
So far as the devotee is concerned, is the devotee then leaving it to the Lord, if you will?
Well, it depends on the situation. It's not, as I was saying earlier, it's not that a devotee, these are a couple of examples, but if another devotee is being threatened, then a devotee will act like fire. Look at Hanuman, he jumped over to Lanka and he burned it to the ground. And his anger was not material. You have to be a little angry to burn a place to the ground. And, you can lose your anger or you can use your anger. It's two different things. And devotees use their anger. They don't lose their anger because they're in full control of their senses. And if a devotee is being threatened or if a devotee is attacked, then we should use our anger in Krishna's service to do whatever we have to do to protect the devotee or the Lord. Even if the devotees are being criticized, then one has the choice. He should stand up to the person and defeat him with logic, arguments, shastra, and so on. If that's not possible, then you should go away, from the situation, but not simply accept it. When the devotees were having a pandal program in the early days in India on a big stage, there were lots of Western devotees there for the first time, and tens of thousands of people came to see the pandal and to see, as Prabhupada said, the dancing white elephants. No one in India had ever seen Western Vaishnavas enthusiastically dancing and so forth. So it was a huge phenomenon. People would come. And on the devotees were sitting on the stage having bhajan, and Prabhupada was on his vyasasana, and the bhajan was going on, and there was a man who was reaching up and trying to touch the feet of the devotees, and there was one Mataji there, and he kept trying to, he was harassing her. And finally, Prabhupada picked up his kartals and, himself fended off this person because he wouldn't stop. And so it's not that, you just sit by and let something happen, but the devotee will, jump in and actually, defend other devotees or make sure that devotees aren't being harassed and so forth. But when it comes to personally being attacked, the devotee is reluctant to retaliate and take any action because he's taking it that Krishna's protecting him. And of course, in that situation, you have to be practical also. I mean, it's not that you just stand there and not defend yourself to some degree. There are oftentimes, we had a preaching on Sankirtan in the old days. It doesn't happen as much nowadays, but we used to get attacked. And, in the cases where other devotees were attacked, I can remember some pretty righteous fights out there. if someone attacked another devotee or something like that, then we'd jump in to defend the devotee. You must. But if someone attacks you, then, you try to minimize it as much as possible. And usually whenever I got attacked, I took it as Krishna's arrangement that I was being relieved of a lot of sinful activities from my previous life in one fell swoop. What's your realization, Janani Vasprabhu?
Sometimes I had some bad experiences on book distribution, I can remember specifically. And I would always try to think like that Krishna is giving me an opportunity to practice humility. Because it's not, that's really when you're put to the test, when you're put in a humiliating situation.
Mm.
Otherwise, it can be a sense, we can get in the habit of making it a lip service, or just saying it like as part of standard Vaishnava etiquette to express humility. And then it can just be, not to say lip service, but it can just become just a daily kind of habit or something we don't think about much. But when we're put in a humiliating situation, then that's our real chance to practice humility. And So sometimes I would get in situations, or even conflicts with devotees, or just in a really embarrassing situation where I did something or said something really dumb. And then I would, I mean, not always. Sometimes you fail, sometimes you pass, but sometimes I remember instances where Krishna gave me the remembrance, oh, here's a chance to be humble, now I really have this chance, and then I would actually kind of feel instant relief, or almost like, this is a really good opportunity to practice.
That's some really nice points. You know, one thing about being in Sankirtan, you're out in public, and there's a way in which anything can happen. And to learn humility there, it's such an uncommon thing for somebody to actually have true humility, that when people encounter somebody who they reproach or they attack somehow, and then the person comes back with humility, so it's very disarming sometimes for people. And also, on the other side, I've had the experience, now that you mention it, of not taking the humble role in public at a certain point, and then getting a severe reaction because of it. And because of that, realizing how important it is, even, and how it's always better to take that position. And with devotees, Prabhupada taught us, if we're having argument with another devotee, that we should offer obeisances. You know, it's a way of neutralizing the situation. At the end of whatever conflict or argument or whatever there is, the devotee etiquette is you don't walk away angry, but you'll say, please accept my obeisances. And you offer, but it's very hard to remain angry when your head is on the, you know, ground at the feet of another Vaishnava. And this is the proper, this is the training we receive from Prabhupada, and it works. And this is the etiquette. You know, if there's some altercation that flares up for some reason, at the end, you both come to your senses, or one of you at least, and so, I'm sorry, please accept my obeisances, like that. And this is good practice. Yes, Prabhuji.
Prabhuji, this is an extreme example of, you know, physical provocation. And let's say, you know, from a monetary perspective, someone owes you money as an example. So not an insignificant amount, but, you know, now, which is not forthcoming. So would you go to a level of, you know, maybe in family matters, that, you know, legal, or, you know, which you wouldn't like to do that, you know, as a devotee, or at the same time, so in such circumstances, where do we draw a line as a devotee?
Well, in the case of when you're managing Krishna's money or Krishna's property, then you go to the ends of the earth to reclaim that. And the example that we have for Prabhupada was in Bombay, when Prabhupada bought the Juhu property. Actually, he saw that property and he promised it to Krishna. He said, I'm going to get that for you. And then, you know, later on, there were some dealings. You probably know well about those from reading the Lilamrita and such. And they tried to cheat, and Prabhupada did not give up at all. And in fact, when Mr. Nair passed away, you know, Prabhupada said, Jai. You know, that, not out of spite, but out of, you know, a feeling that, you know, everything, Krishna had balanced everything out. But Prabhupada fought tooth and nail, you know, to get that property back. When it comes to our personal wealth and property, one way or another, it can be taken away. We should, as Prabhupada said, not try to accumulate huge amounts of wealth. That we should use it in Krishna's service as soon as we have the opportunity, because one way or another, it'll go away. It's like the two guys walking down the alleyway, and the dacoit comes up to him and says, okay, your money or your life. And the one friend turns to the other one, he says to the dacoit, one second. He turns to his friend and says, Bob, here's that $10 I owe you. Pays him back. Or Gopala Bhan. You know, Gopala Bhan was, he was a stingy landowner, and he used to, all his friends said, Gopala Bhan, you're so stingy. Why don't you ever give anything to Vishnu? and he was carrying this huge plate of grains on his head, and a gust of wind came and it blew the grains and they went flying, and he goes, I offer that to Vishnu. Before someone comes, some agent of the Lord comes, we should try to engage it in Krishna service, because one way or another it'll be taken. We think, oh, it's safe, it's in the Bank of America. But, you know, anything can happen. You know, Krishna, if he can trick Hiranyakashipu, you know, with all of his safeguards, he can definitely get in our safety deposit box or wherever else we're thinking we're hiding something, you know, that we're keeping for ourselves. But, you know, I've seen situations with advanced devotees who have had, you know, like they've loaned money or whatever, and you have to maintain your household, you have a personal thing, and you should invest your money wisely and take, you know, be a good custodian. So if something like that happens, you do your due diligence like you do everything else in your life, and then you depend on Krishna. And don't become obsessed. I saw one of my friends, advanced devotee, who, you know, does some business, and he had loaned some money or something like that. And, you know, after it was obvious that the person was trying to take advantage, then he did the best he could, due diligence. And then after that, he said, okay, maybe I stole it from him in his last life, you know. And you have to be a little detached. So when it's your own personal property, just like everything else, your house, your children, balasyaneha sharanam pitaro na shringha nartasya chaga mun udambati majatono taptasya tat prativedir yaihanshasheshtas tavadvibo tanuvitam twarupekshitanam. Twarupekshitanam means if the Lord's neglecting us, then there's no hope for anything we do. And if he's watching out for us, then everything will be rectified in the end anyway. So we do the best we can. But then if you become obsessed with trying to protect your property one way or the other, your personal effects and everything like that, then eventually you simply become exhausted by the process of trying to balance everything in the material world. So due diligence, but then after that, you know, wash your hands and let Krishna take care of the situation. But when it comes to protecting the devotees and protecting the temples, we'll go to the ends of the earth, we'll lay down our life. But even then, I saw, read a letter where Prabhupada, there was some cheating situation. The devotees were really green and they were making all kinds of deals. Real estate was being bought and things like that. And at one point, Prabhupada, you know, he said, okay, they cheated us, we lost the money, let's move on. We can't become, sidetracked too much. So you have to use, you know, your intelligence also and see when it's gone, it's gone. And Krishna can make any arrangement. Any other? Yes?
So the Vaishnava accepts as Krishna's arrangement, but isn't that disturbing? I mean, we just talked about inattentive chanting. I mean, inattentive when it comes to chanting. So isn't that a disturbance to the Vaishnava?
Yeah, and sometimes disturbance, your most disturbed times can be your most productive. Speaking from personal experience, some of the times when you're most frustrated, or when your life seems the most troubled or disturbed, that's when you actually take shelter of Krishna. And the other times when things are going well and, you know, it looks like you're really going to do well and you think, well, you know, I'll surrender a little bit, but it's not looking too bad here. You know? But when you get pushed to the wall, you know, and that's why it's Krishna's arrangement. You know, for a devotee, sometimes even when Parikshit Maharaj was notified, that he said, you know, you imagine getting this news tomorrow. Hey, you've got a curse. I mean, something... You're going to die in 7 days. You know, something comes down like that on the phone, you know, like you get an email. What? The 7 days? You know, how did he take it? He said that because I was so attached to family life, this is in the Brihat Bhagavatamrita, he explains how I was too attached to family life, but Krishna, out of his infinite mercy, has come, and he's now pulling me out, because otherwise I never would have surrendered. This is the humility of a Vaishnava. He's already a pure Vaishnava. But he's saying now Krishna has come in this form to take me out. Let the snake bird or whatever magical thing this Brahman has created bite me at once. I simply wish that you all go on speaking the glories of Lord Vishnu. Period. And he didn't try to counteract it. He could have. So a disturbing time for a Vaishnava is a good time. This is Queen Kunti said, Vipada santatashasvat tatra tatra jagadguru bhavato darshanam yatsyad apunar bhavadarshanam. She said, let it happen again and again. Because what happened to the Pandavas, Vishan Mahagne Purushara Darshanada Satsabhaya Vanavasra Kritshataha Mridey Mridey Neka Maharatastrato Tronyaschatas Chasmahare Birakshitaha. That she names all these things that happened. Like they tried to kill Bhima when he was a kid by poisoning him with a cake. They tried to burn the Pandavas by putting them in a house of lac and burning it out. All these cannibals came at them in the forest, and they had to defend themselves against cannibals. They got banished. They tried to strip Draupadi naked in this assembly with all these people in it. It went on and on and on, and she said, okay, all these things happened, but then when they happen, then you're always there the most. You came and manifested in all these ways to save us. So let it happen all the time, because when that happens, then we see you. And so please let calamity come. Who prays like that? You know. So devotees, actually, we're practicing, and so when a calamity comes, we'll be tested, like Jananivas Prabhu was saying. And then we'll feel mercy, because we'll take shelter of Bhagavad Gita. All this time we're practicing, and when the real thing comes, when the live bullets start coming, then we'll feel like, oh, okay, there is a place to take shelter. And we'll feel the most mercy at that time. And frustration is good. Pingala, the prostitute, she attained perfection because of her frustration in her occupation. And the Avanti Brahmin, he attained perfection because of frustration. Everything was taken from him because he was so stingy. Even the demigods stopped giving him. His relatives neglected him. Because stingy people, they lose everything eventually. And then he became so frustrated that detachment grew in his heart and he became a great devotee. So all these adversities are actually Krishna coming in a very special form to the devotee. But in the beginning, it's not like, you know, the first day you get the email or you get the phone call or, you know, the doctor tells you, whatever it is, you know, that you're going to be all cheery about it. It may take a little while to process this. Even Prabhupada said after he took sannyas, he got gored by a bull, he was lying on the street, and he thought, what's going on, you know? And you know, he lost all his money, and devotees laughed, and Prabhupada said, no, you become very morose. Krishna takes everything away. So it's darkest before the dawn. But still, that mercy, that feeling is there, because you... Where do I take shelter? Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. And then immediately we feel satisfaction. And like one devotee, Savas told me one time, when he had a very trying time in his life, he said like something, he said, don't think, you know, it won't happen to you. Whatever it is, everyone will be tested in some way. You know, some way it'll come, the test, that where, you know, you'll be pushed to some edge. Where you have to take shelter of Krishna. Well, in some circumstances, you won't be able to. You know, we'll be helpless. Bali Maharaj was completely tied up by the Lord, and, you know, he had been the emperor of the universe, and now he's completely tied down. But if we're in a situation where we're thinking surrender, don't surrender, we should take counsel from the devotees and... figure out what to do in circumstances. You know, Kesha Bharti Maharaj, when he was just saying to somebody the other day, I heard him speaking about how in making any of his big life decisions, he talked to 25 devotees that he respected first. 25. So this is a good way to, you know, to decide what to do if you're down the middle on something. You know, should I go this way or that way? Talk to 25 devotees. Or at least, you know, at least have, you know, five in your Rolodex that you regularly take counsel from and take shelter of, because this is the way to, you know, make sure that we're moving ahead. Sadhu, Shastra, and Guru. You look at the Shastra, and you hear from your Guru, and you hear from the Sadhus. And then you make your independent decision based on your personal surrender to Krishna. Om Tat Sat, Hare Krishna. Today's we're having a special grain ceremony for Ananda Rupa and Mohini Shakti's baby who's here. How do you go? And this grain ceremony is a very important ceremony because it's actually, where's Mohini Shakti and Ananda Rupa?
She's in the kitchen.
Is Ananda coming?
Yeah, I saw him running.
Oh, okay. Well, maybe I'll just wait till they get here and we can. Otherwise, I'm sure they'd like to hear about their own grain ceremony. So we'll just. Oh, and I just want to make one announcement here, too, really quick. And I'm sorry I'm going over here. Also, Kesha Bharti Maharaj has sent his apologies. He wasn't feeling well this morning. He wanted to come down to the class and everything, but he's been really pushing it lately. And so he felt sore throat and things coming on. So I could have dragged him, but...
After the kirtan.
After the kirtan. Okay, great. Here I got a fax yesterday, some really good news. And this fax is the year totals for Transcendental Literature Distribution in North America. It has December and Outstanding Temples. And they have written here from the BBT that the 42 temples that regularly bought books from the BBT in North America distributed 650,101 pieces of literature in 2006. One interesting observation of the totals of book distributed is that the results are not just one or two temples or a particular zone, but every temple from Vancouver to Miami, Montreal to San Diego, all pitched in with very sincere effort to please Srila Prabhupada through book distribution. All 42 temples that are in North America did their level best to maintain and increase the order of Srila Prabhupada to make sure that every man and woman get a book. There were some very bright spots for the year and December and the December marathon. Atlanta, New Taliban, New York, Denver, Ottawa, San Diego, San Jose, and Los Angeles all did excellently for December. While Los Angeles, Denver, St. Louis, San Jose, and New Vrindavan all had great performances for the year. Amen. He lists below the top temples and their percentages increase in percentages of increase or decrease over 2000 from 2004, 5, and 6. And I'm proud to announce that we had a 100% increase in our remittance to the BBT last year. So congratulations to everybody here. That's huge. That's doubling what we did last year. We doubled it. Haribo!
Haribo!
Listing here, outstanding temples, the top 10 in North America out of 42 temples. Number one was Los Angeles. Number two was New Vrindavan. Los Angeles remitted $316,895. Next one down the list was New Vrindavan. New Vrindavan remitted
$43,283. That's number two?
Yeah, that's number two. St. Louis, $27,296. Denver was number four spot, $25,506. And San Jose, number five in America, at $21,630 to the BBT. And I must say that, you know, we're in striking distance of Denver and St. Louis and maybe even New Vrindavan. Yeah. Because actually, Rakshit, what are you
going
to say?
No, I was going to say that we had one pending invoice. Which I said we'll pay in January. Had we paid in December, we would have been overtaken.
Really?
Really?
Oh, my goodness. Well, something to shoot for. We're moving up the list.
So that'll go into this year then. That'll give us a kickstart.
But it would be, like someone said last night, I think it was Bhakta Paul, who's always very salutary, but he was saying, well, that's amazing. We doubled it. That should be in the BTG. And I said, if we double it this year, then we'll put it in the BTG. He said, 1 year, that's something, you know, or it could be a flash in the pan to anybody looking. But if you can double it to, you know, the next year, it means that you're on to something, on system. And I can say from personally knowing what's going on with these temples and who's remitting the Lakshmi exactly, like in St. Louis, there's 3 devotees. But they go out full time. And those devotees are over 60 years old. And so it's a little precarious situation because any one of them, like, what's his name there? There's Chakri, Divyananda, and Gargamuni. And actually, most of it's coming from Divyananda. But he's steadily going out every week and remitting. And so you figure over a year, he's putting in, like, you know, just a couple, what, 3,000 a month? 2,500 a month, something like that. And, you know, means 700 a week, something, 750 a week, something like that, steadily. But I'm just saying that a few people doing everything, it can change. You know, God forbid something can happen to his health or something. Actually, he's like 65 years old, I think. And but here we have a situation where you have a lot of devotees doing a little bit. And I think that it's a much more stable situation. So I think that our increase is significant because it's based on we're building systems, we're bringing in more and more devotees, you know, and nobody's really, you know, we're doing the yajna and everything like that, but it's not like any one person is killing themselves. It's a lot of teamwork and everything like that, right? So I think this is a great model to show increase based on the whole community getting involved and everybody doing a little bit. And it's not just coming from one person. It's coming from 40 to 60 different people contributing. So congratulations to everybody for an outstanding year. Numbers don't lie. We doubled it last year, and we're off to a good start already this year because of carrying over from last year.
So our monthly Sankirtan festival is in 2 weeks?
Our monthly Sankirtan festival is in 2 weeks. Not next weekend, but the weekend after, is that correct?
Yes.
Right, so in 2 weeks. So we got to, you know, hurry.
Right before Lord Nityananda's appearance.
It's between Advaita Acharya's appearance day and Lord Nityananda's. It's sandwiched in between. So this should, to kick off the year, this should be an extraordinary festival. Our goal is that everyone on the Sankirtan party will do at least 1 hour